Hey everyone, welcome to More Than Mises Guys. This podcast is a journey through Transformers from the beginning of the anime series with three old friends coming at it from different perspectives. Together, we will go episode by episode with the occasional extra to look at how the show holds up or if it's a trap of nostalgia. We'll look at all things involved in the episode, whether there are real-world factors that crept into the writing or the episode is typical afternoon cartoon fodder. I'm Evan, I'm a lifelong fan, as well familiar with all aspects of the franchise and the fandom. While Ed was never really familiar with too much of it, he knew the show, but was really nothing. He got it in. Jay, who is here right in the middle. And guys, how's it going?
I'm doing well. I was having some computer issues, like updates running. And so while I was waiting for that, I was building a thing for Warhammer. And I've been inhaling fumes from glue for the last couple of minutes. So if I'm loopy, I apologize in advance. So Jehu, what's happening with you?
Nothing really to report. I guess I should report on my eye patch. That's not a bit. I have an issue with my left eye that acts up sometimes, but basically turns everything into it like a funhouse mirror.
Oh.
So it's just better to block it out than try to deal with it.
Particularly when I have notes
I need to read.
I figured you had been like playing a lot of like Yakuza, and you were just a really big fan of like Majima from Yakuza.
I don't know, scar down below the patch.
I don't normally like to bring up current events, but first off, R.I.P. James Earl Jones.
Man, no kidding, right?
What? That literally like just got announced like right before.
Yeah.
Evan, I thought you had seen that.
Man, I'm like fighting like the flu or something. So I just downed a glass of rum and I'm drinking Red Bull to try to keep going. You know, I'm not hip to what's going on, but that's terrible.
Yeah.
He wasn't exactly young, but
both halves of Darth Vader are gone.
Oh yeah, that's right. Well,
I'm gonna watch Conan the Barbarian.
Two-thirds of Darth Vader are gone.
What's the other third?
Hayden Christensen.
Oh, okay, that's a good point.
Well, actually, only half, because Jake Lloyd is still alive, I think, isn't he?
Okay, so
I mean, technically he is
Darth Vader. He doesn't want to be associated with that, but yeah.
Yeah. So like False of Doom is gone, and made like a lot of really good baseball movies. Made a couple of really good baseball movies is gone, and that bums me out because I'm a big fan of baseball. But
I love the way in Field of Dream he says baseball. There's like an extra syllable in there. Right. Like the S is its own syllable. I love it.
My son's a big, he's tentatively a big sports fan, but he likes to watch sports, like kids' sports movies. And we've watched The Sandlot about 1,000 times, which is a fantastic movie, but he's really good. Like, I love how excited and how into that role he is in that. But I'll tell you what I've been watching a lot of lately, and that's Star Trek.
Nice.
Man, I love Star Trek. But I started watching Deep Space Nine again, which I love, which might be the best Star Trek series. Might be tied with Strange New Worlds and also The Next Generation for the best Star Trek series. But I've been thinking a lot about what was the coolest physical transformation in Star Trek? Was it when Riker grew a beard in season 2 of Next Generation and became a Doobie Brother? Or was it when Sisko became Stone Cold Steve Austin in the second season of Deep Space Nine?
100% Sisko.
Those are both great.
Because Riker was terrible before he had the beard. He was awful. Okay. And that show wasn't very good in that first season. I'm going to go ahead and throw that out there. So.
Man, Sisko, when he grew a beard and shaved the head, became Shaft, the space station captain. Perfect.
Yeah. Because he was different. Good. He was totally different at that point. He basically went back to being like Hawk from Spencer for Hire.
100%.
Yes.
He became also, much more stern.
He really did.
He just like, he, okay. The thing about him, the actor is a stage actor. You can see the way he moves around in the show. He's a stage actor. He's very big movements. He doesn't pull things in really tight. You can just tell he's a stage actor. But when he shaves the head and grows the goatee, man, you just don't care anymore. He just looks cool no matter what he does.
Yeah,
so totally. I mean, Riker, he was much better with the beard. That whole first season was really awkward.
Well, a lot of the problem with that first season too is that I don't know that they really want knew what they wanted it to be, and so like Picard was just kind of like walk again. The whole show was a lot of stage actors, and so Picard was just walking around like shouting off all this like Shakespearean dialogue and delivery and stuff, and it was like there were some cool episodes, but man, there was some rough stuff in that first season, man.
I really like watching the first season just because and this is something you don't get to do as much now because shows are sort of like fully formed before they come on. But used to, the first season of a show was like learning how to do a show. And Star Trek: The Next Generation is just a great example of that because they didn't really know what for the first four or five episodes what Data was, what the parameters were. They didn't really know who any of the characters were, and it I think it's fun to watch them figure that out, even though some of the episodes are clunkers.
I would,
My wife's not. Oh, go ahead. Go ahead.
I would say actually, the Next Generation became a different show. When it, they had like the Borg cliffhanger, that's when it became a different show to
That was a
me.
good show. Yeah, that was a good
That
one.
was
Yeah.
great. That was a great multi-part, in the season. But that's when it changed. It became, it started off kind of innocent. Data's makeup wasn't really that great a lot of times, and Riker needed a beard, and they had Troy walking around in the skirt. But after a while, man, that episode, that cliffhanger changed everything. It made the stakes really tough. And
My favorite thing, 100% favorite thing about the first season of Star Trek: The Next Generation is to make it appear that it wasn't sexist that they put Troy in a short skirt. They would also put some dudes in a short skirt. I just loved that.
That's real progressive, man. That's real progressive. But I'd say the worst thing about that are those rough episodes are like my wife doesn't like Star Trek. She's like it's whatever, I don't care. But I'm like, no, there's really good episodes, And then but every time that she comes in and I'm watching one, it's always like that terrible first appearance of the Ferengi, and because that episode is trash. And
Right. The
it was
whips.
like when I started watching The Witcher, and she was like, "What is this?" I was like, "Oh, it's The Witcher." She's like, "What's that like?" I was like. And for me, off the top of my head, I know this was a terrible way to go about this. I was like, it's kind of like Game of Thrones because she loves Game of
No.
Thrones. And that was the closest comparison I could come up with. I was like, that's kind of Game of Thrones. And she's like, but then the episode that she saw was the one with the dragon, that terrible CG dragon. And she's just looking at me like, nope. And I'm like, yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know what it's, I don't know what
Hey
it's like.
God, I actually had my wife, we watched the 1994 Crow, and it's such a good movie. I love it. I loved it still. But
We
she said
watched The Crow that me and Sarah watched The Crow this weekend too.
yeah, she goes, that was kind of cheesy. I'm like, what?
It was
So
the
those
guitar
things.
solo part. It was a guitar part on the roof of one.
Yeah, maybe. The things like don't always hold up, but maybe it's that moment in time. And I really, I mean, there was this whole moment in time with the original series where sorry, original series of Star Trek. I loved the soft filter on the women every time. It's like they did the Vaseline lens or something like that, just to make it look a little weird and spacey and stuff. And I watched God, it was Mudd's Women recently. And I say that because I came across something that I completely forgot about, which leads into this. Motor Master's voice actor is Roger Carmel. He is Harry Mudd. And yeah,
Oh,
you talk like
crazy.
this. Yeah, if you
Okay.
watch Harry Mudd in the original series and you look at like Motor Master, oh yeah, he's just doing a gravelly voice. He also, and this is a little, spoiler for season three. One of my favorite characters of season three was Cyclonus, and that is him doing it with a gravelly, like Tom Waits thing going on. And it's
Oh.
great. It's Roger Carmel. He did a lot of stuff though, but yeah, he Harry Mudd, Harcourt Fenton Mudd, is Motor Master.
Wow.
Yeah,
And
yeah.
that's great because one of the notes I took on this episode is that Motor Master's voice is great.
Yes, it is.
He
Voice
very
is
much
very cool.
sounds like a trucker who turns
It
into a
does.
truck.
It does. I love all their voices, honestly.
So yeah.
So
So
also
there is. Oh, what's up?
done by Alan Oppenheimer, which is Skeletor, well, half of He-Man, honestly. So Alan Oppenheimer does a breakdown of this too. There's a bunch of other...
Also from the movie Oppenheimer, I heard.
Yeah, he did. A lot of people don't know that was the last chapter of that movie.
Yeah, that I love it when he goes, "You ninnies!" On that movie. That was fantastic.
Oh, yeah. It's like, and, you know, there was never a final season of The Fugitive where they showed that he became a wrestler. So
that would have been really cool. Yeah, I wish they would have done that.
Say what?
I wish they would have done that.
I wish they would have done that too. That would be great, right?
He invented the mandible claw.
He did. Correct. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Ratchet has a different voice actor. It's Wally Burr in this. Wally Burr. He's like, who's the voice director or something like the whole series?
Oh, he's crazy. Like, okay.
Yeah, I can do that. I can jump in there. So yeah, it's like Ratchet sounds all off. It's just a little, you know, tidbit stuff behind the scenes.
So yeah,
but
the masquerade.
The masquerade.
Here we go. Yeah.
So I don't know how to get into this, but yeah, like Megatron's like, "Hey guys, I need you to go get three parts for me."
Dude, Starscream just calls him a fool right out of the gate. It's the second line of dialogue.
Starscream is on Megatron's butt the entire episode. He is the smartest guy in the room.
Well, I mean, definitely in this episode, he is.
Yes, for this episode.
He's the smartest guy in the room, as long as Soundwave isn't in the room. But, yeah, he's just out of the gate. He's just like, you're a fool. You have no time for this. But... So Megatron assigns the Stunticons to go on a mission, and I'm okay with this because like we've gotten a lot of combiners lately, and I'm a fan. Like I love the combiners. So
this one definitely starts off with, "Hey, we can do what Cobra does in the first act of an episode that takes them like five episodes." Because it's 100% a G.I. Joe miniseries in the first part where it's like, "Hey, we got to gather these three components and make something."
They're making the Pyramid of Darkness. You're right.
They are. Yeah, totally. It's
fantastic. Yeah. Great callback to that.
Yep.
And they're like, they go and, I don't know, break in a scientist's lab and take this lens thingy.
Well, no, back up here.
So
the Stunticons like split up into three teams to get these three things that Megatron wants. And so like, couldn't they have gotten like some tapes to go hang out with these guys and help out so they could like not split up the guys that need to be together?
Dude, these are the jerks. No one wants to be around these guys.
They could have sent like Astro Train's a jerk. Nobody likes him. Nobody on the Decepticons likes anybody else. Those guys are the most functional bad guys of all time. They could have sent somebody to go out there. Like
they're just like other five thugs.
Yeah, and that's that's fine, but like, so there's a quick like insert and the arc here where like Ironhide doesn't even know that the Stunticons are the antagonists of this episode, but he's asking for a tune-up in case he has to fight the Stunticons.
Like, "Oh no, buddy, you're fine the way you are.
Also, you're a van. Yeah, how are you going to do stunts? You're a van.
You're a vanette." No one's expecting to do anything.
Oh, man.
"Oh, my Ratchet, you just give me a little upgrade." Yeah, and there's banter going on in the arc, and that's when the Stunticons start going to these different locations, and I guess they're having Teletran 1 track where the Stunticons are.
Yeah, they can just zero in like all the time. They've got the hero cam this time instead of the villain cam. But they first go to the Republic Optics Company, which is just a place that has for some reason they have their window wide open on the front with the telescope sticking out. I don't know what this guy's checking out the girls that work at the insurance place across the street.
Yeah, it's Breakdown and Wild Rider. They bust in those look like Autobots. There's no one driving.
This poor idiot, like, this absolute fool, just sees self-driving cars and is this the Autobots? What if he saw a Tesla? What if it was a Tesla and he was
Autobots? I mean, and again, for robots in disguise, the Autobots are really well known because everybody who sees this says the same thing. "Oh, check it out! There's a car with no driver. Here comes the Autobot."
Yeah, but all of these windows are tinted like purple and pink and blue and stuff, and like they just, there's no driver in there. Like I've had cars that were tinted so dark that you couldn't see anything inside, and like you couldn't even see out.
Everything's fine, obviously, and we need like all the world leaders to send around a memo. Okay, this is an Autobot. This is a Decepticon. Know the symbols. No problem anymore. But yeah, they pull that trope again, like, oh, there could be Autobots, and then they bust in the wall.
Yep.
Yeah. So we're just not going to say anything. They're going to grab it and leave. Like, well, and I got to imagine the guys are like, well, I don't think those are Autobots.
I don't think they were, buddy.
Yeah, that seemed like
might be onto something.
Very astute power of observation there.
Yeah. And that's it. Oh my God. Well, Indianapolis car. What am I forgetting the name?
Is he Dead End? Is that Dead End?
Dead End's the Porsche. Oh. And then the yellow one. I'm a terrible Transformers fan. Okay, yeah. Those who show up into an army base again, you know, and they just blow the way through and grab this generator and they're cool, whatever. Oh, man.
That was like a construction. Yeah, it was like a, yeah, but. Like, so the foreman that's like running this crane is that they're moving this generator around with a crane, and this dude, like this real like manly 80s, like macho manly dude with a mustache is like, careful, men. Like, this dude's real into saying the word men. Like, he's a big like Turbo Negro fan or something like that. Like, he should be wearing a bunch of like denim and stuff, and like men. Like these dudes are gonna do something.
The foreman.
Yeah, they're going to do some manly stuff behind the scenes here. Because
that's Dragster, by the way. That's his name.
The Decepticons are like, hey, soldier boys. Like, these guys, there's some subtext going on here. I'm just saying. All right.
100%. My favorite things, because one of the things I think that we have gained, but is really a loss, is that you can just put adult things into cartoons now.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas used to, they just, like, that was the only joy these guys seemed to get, was to sneak little adult things in this. And like, there's one point in this, let me see what it was, because there was one point where Megatron said something. What was it? He said, he was talking about the docking tower, but I'm sure he said ducking tower for it to sound like some other sort of tower. Oh, and I was like, man, somebody just loved that. Somebody had the best time with ducking tower.
Oh, I'm sure that they had fun putting these like Tom of Finland guys in here, moving generators around and stuff too. And, the whole village people are in here, like, okay, so.
And Motormaster shows up at a museum, just goes to the front door, and they've got the biggest Ruby in the world sitting in a glass case, like you're going to a jeweler store.
Right, like, there.
Thanks, I'll take that.
I mean, one of the things I've noticed about the Transformers universe is there's some real high ceilings. These guys just go into buildings and stand up all the time.
There's like also a lot of jewels on display. If you go in cartoon, right? you ever seen a jewel on display anywhere? You ever seen, like, I've never seen this. Like,
no.
But these heists are real anticlimactic, man. They're just like, oh yeah, we just got it, and that was it. Like these are like, it's like a 15-second heist.
I'm going back a few episodes. They should have sent Rumble.
Oh, Rumble
was way better at this.
And it would have been so much better too. Guys, give me that Ruby.
Is he better at it? Because these guys did it in 15 seconds.
Well, that's true. I guess what I mean by better is more entertaining.
Okay.
He just killed a race car driver for no reason.
and a guy driving a semi. the Autobots like split up in three teams once again, just like the Decepticons, to go stop the different Decepticons showing up.
We got the safety bots.
Safety. Oh, your favorite.
We nerds. We got that yellow fire truck, man. I hate
Grapple.
That guy. What's his name?
Grapple.
Grapple.
I was gonna ask about this. Why do both Grapple and Hoist have Frasier voices?
They do.
Like, I guess it's making up for, you know, from the first batch, like both Ratchet and Wheeljack are real working class.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, Ratchet's like an old West doctor, and you know, and Wheeljack's just like a mechanic. Like, he literally has the same voice as a mechanic. But I don't know why both of these guys had to be Frasier. Like, I think one of them could have been Frasier to point out a difference.
Or not team him up all the time.
And not team them up all the time. That's also true.
They can both be Frasier, but don't put them on the team together every time they have to, you know, do some safety stuff.
You only need one Brainy Smurf. You only need one of those two guys.
Brainy Smurf.
And then Inferno is there to even them out.
Right.
They're having like all kinds of trouble shooting the Sunicons, and then like Breakdown, which they went deep into Breakdown's tech spec, his original write-up. You know, he like leaks stuff all the time. It was the whole thing where he starts leaking oil. And, what was it? Is it Hoist shoots it, or is it Grapple shoots it and starts it out?
Hold on. Yeah. These three geeks, their plan to stop him is they transform into robot mode and they stand in the middle of the street. What does he do?
He'll stand the road.
He becomes a metaphor for immigration, and he just drives around them.
Put a wall up. Flip over it.
And then Inferno, with the weakest line, the weakest trash talk of all time. The Autobots are terrible. They're historically terrible at trash talk. He goes, he says, a near miss deserves some near missiles. But then he shoots a laser beam at him. He doesn't even shoot missiles. And besides, a near miss, that wouldn't that be just miss? If it was a near missile,
good at banter, man. Come on. He's a nerd. He
gets away. Bot. He's a safety bot. He's like the OG safety bot, though. He's like the Gen 1 safety bot.
Yeah. Well,
we're still in Gen 1, but like.
And who is it that shoots the oil and starts a fire?
Grapple.
It is Grapple, does it? Shoots a fire and like Breakdown catches on fire. He's like, oh no. And then like Inferno goes, like, I'll hate myself later for this. And she puts him out.
Let him burn. That is not good teamwork.
No,
it's terrible. So, and besides, I mean, like, Saving Private Ryan proved that the good guys can just let bad guys burn. Like, save the bullets, let them burn. You know, like, hey, I'm sorry, bro. Like, you shouldn't have been in the fire.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. that's a whole other tangent. But, they're beaten there. They would seem kind of anticlimactic there, too. So. But Dragstrip and Dead End are driving down the beach, and Warpath comes out and starts shooting them.
Warpath
and Trax.
There's a tank and a Corvette driving on the beach.
A flying Corvette, Stingray.
Corvette.
I love that. It's like a flying car. How droll.
That's one of my favorite things, too. It's like $20 words that they throw into kids' shows to make kids feel like they're smarter than they are. You know, like when I was a kid, I would have been like, oh man, droll, that's a big word.
Then you would use it on the playground and everyone would be like, what are you talking about?
Right. How droll. Oh, let's beat this guy to death.
Yeah. See, now you're the safety bot. You've got the Frasier voice now.
But I love Dead End. He's my favorite of the Syndicon, so I'm cool with this. And yeah, like they actually plan out how to take him out this time. Like Trax has this like gun that shoots darkness.
I don't know.
So yeah,
definitely this is an episode where everybody remembered their Bob Budaski powers.
Yes,
you know, their file 100%. Card powers.
Yeah.
100%. They went through the tech specs. Oh yeah, Trax has a darkness gun, which he legitimately does. It shoots darkness.
So we're finally going to get Motor Master versus Optimus Prime. We're going to get the Battle of the Rigs. Man, I'm really excited for this. And then they just play chicken and they crash into each other.
This is great. Like Spike's sitting on the Bumblebee's, a frunk, I guess. And he's holding blaster. Like he's sitting out there like he's on the street corner and getting around watching and you have people breakdance. And Optimus Prime does his whole thing. Crashes into him, and there's this whole like gasp, what happened? Because the smoke's all up and going on, and it's like red smoke. I don't know.
I also think they have an on file of Spike screaming Optimus. It's like their Wilhelm scream. Anytime Optimus looks like he hurt, he doesn't have to say it again. They just bring it out of the vault.
Probably.
But Dude, Motor
yeah,
Master.
I mean, it is a pretty cool act break. I mean, you're like, oh man, Optimus Prime just exploded. Except he didn't.
Oh, that's a good point. It was at the, yeah, I think it was at a commercial break there or something. So when you come, yeah, you're like, oh, so when you come back, it's like, oh, what's going on? But I will report though that I think I updated like my browser and my ad block works on YouTube again. So I'm not getting an ad every like minute and a half, and that's very cool. So I didn't even get that. But man, Motor Master got straight up wrecked. Dude, this dude is like, well, wheels are falling off. He can't even move. He doesn't even make any noises. He's totally destroyed. And yeah, I'm like, right. I feel as bad for him as I've ever felt for any Transformer in this entire series. So I'm like, he didn't deserve that. He's cool.
Well, what about when they go and punch through Dead End's like hood, like punches down through the ground and pulls it out?
Yeah, but I mean, this is like the leader of these guys, though. This is like one dude, and he's just like poor guy. He's just like totally, completely destroyed and wrecked, and just like laying on the road like that, man. It's like carnage. He's like nobody cares. Nobody cares about
him. Yeah, and I mean, there's no argument, but he's weaker. They were the same size. They were going the same velocity. He was just a wuss.
Yeah.
I mean, Optimus Prime got up and was like, oh, I kind of got a headache, Spike.
they did what every time there's a new Transformer to show off, they're unstoppable. But by the time they get to the next episode, they're pretty stoppable. So we already they have their grace period.
I don't know, man, because you know there's times when like even when the first time they formed Devastator, they just kind of like punched him and knocked him apart. He just kind of fell down. Anytime there's new Decepticons that they show up, that they're like, oh, these guys are new, and they come out and they're like, oh, they just get beat. At this point I was kind of like, what's going on here? Because at this point in the show, in the episode, we're only like maybe a third of the way through this, but like the Autobots have defeated all of the Decepticons' plans here, and I'm like, what are we gonna do? Where are we going from here? And this is like they're just gonna hang out for play baseball for
whole plan to do all of this just to beat him up and put him in jail. There's no mention of like doing anything else with this, and I think like Spike brings up Optimus Prime's like, hey, I got an idea, and
it was 100% Spike's idea, which I always hate. I hate it as a kid, I hate it as now. You have plenty of tactical advisors, why are you listening to this kid dressed like a construction worker?
15-year-old kid,
right?
Yeah,
well, the other thing with that too is that like at this point, I mean, we're like, what, like 2 years into this show at this point,
right?
You know, and like, you know, we're like 80 episodes in this show, and like everybody loves the Transformer. Everybody like loves the Autobots. Like, you don't need that lens. You don't need the relatable character. The Autobots are relatable. I'd rather hang out with those guys and hang out with Spike.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, you got the traveling Wilburys and the safety bots. I mean, yeah, but so yeah, they concoct this plan and they spray with like disguise paint that makes them look just like the Decepticons.
We have robots in disguise in disguise.
In disguise. Right. We must go deeper.
So many levels of Transformers here. This is great.
I mean, this is one of my favorite things about Transformers. You know, in regard to them trying to take your money, because they will never acknowledge, you know, in the media, that two that are repaints look anything alike. Yeah. But they will totally acknowledge that a Lamborghini is also a Lamborghini if it's not a repaint, if it's a separate toy. And this was like five of those all at once.
that's a good point. That's a really good point. Yeah.
And you know, they look really, I don't know, they look just like the Decepticons. Weird how that works.
I also think it was a bummer that like Mirage doesn't even get a scene before he gets turned into it. He's just like, obviously I'm the race car because I'm the race car.
Obviously I'm Mirage.
Their plan is they're going to disguise themselves and they're going to take all the parts to the Decepticons.
Yeah, right. Find out what they're doing with it.
Like, you already
see what they're going to do with it, but if they just kept them,
They would have won.
Couldn't do it.
Right. Yeah. It's like they had the prisoners and they had the stuff. They had the MacGuffins. Like,
this is the legitimate
thing you point out, because I was going to point out this was like towards the end that this is like what they say about Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, and that if you take Indiana Jones out of it, it's still the story turns out the same way. But actually, what you're saying is it's worse. It would have been a happier ending if they just stopped at that point. Yeah. They just royal credits at that point.
Exactly. I see. I hate that thing with.
I do too. I despise it.
That's internet talk, and I hate it. Like, I
do too. Totally.
And I don't like when people say, because my counter to that also, or I use that as a counter, because people like to poop on Prometheus and mm-hmm. was the Alien whatever
Covenant.
The
Alien Covenant.
The most recent Alien, but the one before that.
Yeah, Covenant.
I think
Covenant. Yeah, Covenant. Okay, yeah. So, like, well, they're not acting like scientists. I'm like, bro, Indiana Jones does not act like an archaeologist at all. Yeah. But it's the best movie of all time. So right. I don't want to hear this internet talk about movies. This is I don't like this at all. What's up?
Speaking of that, we actually just watched. My wife watched Prometheus and Covenant, and I got a new respect for watching those again. It really plays well, and almost feels like Ridley Scott's almost trolling everyone. Like, yeah, you want Alien? You're not going to get Alien.
Well, I love Prometheus because it's like the anti-Avatar.
Oh yeah,
you know, instead of Avatar's like touchy feely, I'm okay, you're okay, hippie logic. Its message is God is real and He hates you. You know, I mean, that's a heavy message.
Yeah,
I can't finish. Avatar. I've tried to watch Avatar, I think, 5 times, and I've get about 20 minutes into it, and I just want to turn it off and watch Aliens every time I watch it.
I remember when our friend Tristan came to gaming night. He goes, "That is James Cameron's magnus opus," and I watched it. It's all right. You know, if he actually had better terminology for the stuff, like unobtainium.
That's my favorite bit in the whole movie.
It's so meta. It's like, well, it's hard to get. It's unobtainium.
True Lies is his magnum opus. Everybody knows that.
I mean, I was going to say T2, but True Lies is hard to argue.
Terminator 1 is better than Terminator 2. I'm sorry, man. Like,
yes, some ways.
Terminator 1 is a much better movie than Terminator 2.
I don't know, man, because nobody ever jumps a Sibai truck into a ravine on Terminator 1.
Yeah, but
two, you could be mine.
Oh, yeah, but it has the advantage of not having Edward Furlong in it.
That's true. Michael Biehn is
Michael Biehn. There you go.
I love Michael. Michael Biehn is the person who's been in the most hugely successful movies without himself ever becoming famous.
Yeah, that's
Aliens.
that's pretty accurate. That's
Anyways, back to this gem of an episode. Yeah, they just drive. Okay, and Laserbeak does this whole thing where he's like watching them come in and they're talking to each other in their regular voices. And I think it's like Windcharger's like, "Hey guys, maybe we should talk in our assumed names." And he pulls a whole like Wild Rider thing, like, yeah! And I don't know, it's like Sideswipe's like, "Hey, Jimmy playing that up so much."
Mm-hmm.
You're in disguise. You're trying to pretend you're someone else.
Right.
And this one's Starscream. Like they go down there and like Megatron shoots in the air. I guess it's a signal to go down. But Starscream immediately goes, they're driving awfully carefully for the sun.
He immediately gets it.
He's the smartest guy on the team right now. Everyone else is like, "Oh, obviously they're being Sunnicons. They're just being careful with their cargo."
So they show up here, like the in disguise Autobot show up at the mm-hmm. Decepticons spot where they're doing something or another, their master plan they're doing here. And I, in my notes, I wrote down, man, I really hate that the Autobots can't form Menasor here, because that'd be really cool. And that's going to come back and bite me in the butt here in a minute.
Really? But they arrive there and they're going through the process of like deliver the parts, and he's like, "Oh, of course we got everything, Megatron." back of the base, there's another breakdown power. He can apparently, according to the Bob Budiansky textbook that he has, he can vibrate so much to short things out. So apparently he just vibrates enough to shorts out the Energon cell. And
vibrating is the answer to like a lot of things in comics and in these sorts of things. Cause I feel like the Flash is kind of based around vibrating real fast.
Yeah. 100%.
He wins way more battles with vibrating than he does actually running.
He does. in Spider-Man, like when he had the alien suit, that was the whole solution. The alien suit was a vibration.
You vibrate.
Yeah.
If he would have just fought the Shocker in that stretch, he would have been fine.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, yeah. Old Quilty.
But he goes out and shoots like the safety bots immediately. Shoots them all. They go down.
He takes them right out. But there's a weird scene here where Ironhide and Ratchet, these guys come up and they drew Ratchet like a third of the size as Ironhide, and he's right next to him. He comes up to his waist.
It's like a weird forced perspective that he just didn't think it was so
effective though.
In my notes, I have it as I didn't know that Ironhide had Pokemon Gigantamax powers. Because he's so huge in that scene. It's like, how did they take him out so easily? He was in his ultimate form.
Oh, yeah. Man. He shoots the cells. And apparently, they all get repaired while they're sitting in jail. They all drive out.
They're fine.
Yeah, they're great. Yeah, they're no fine. Problem at all. No brick windows.
Okay, one of the things, you know, I like, I think when watching kids' cartoons is, yeah, I think when you're a kid, a plot hole is an opportunity. You know, when we watch it now, you want the whole story to make sense. But when you're a kid, you would use your imagination to fill the plot holes.
Oh, 100%.
And I remember as a kid specifically thinking on this episode, oh, well, Ratchet's such a nice guy. He must have fixed them.
I'd give you the no prize for that.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
Just like Inferno putting him out when they're on.
Right, right, exactly. I mean, yeah, like these guys have functions that they can't go against.
Yeah,
totally. Yeah, that's definitely no prize territory.
So they form Venusaur right out of the cage, and they just wreck. They're wrecking stuff. They wreck all these dudes. They punch a hole in the wall and just like fly out. And man, like Bumblebee and Spike are like, oh, what's all that noise?
Guys, what happened? Oh, you're all dead. Yeah.
I wonder what happened here.
Oh, but I love the part where I think it was Inferno set up and was like, we're going to be fine. Like, did you check everybody else or did you decide that because you feel fine? Are you a narcissist?
He's the only one that matters, right? So,
yeah. As long as you're okay, dude.
We go back to where the Decepticons are doing their master plan here. And so all this buildup and stealing all these parts, and we find that they have all they've done, their master plan for this episode was they built the HAL from G.I. Joe, the heavy artillery laser, but they just painted it purple.
Well, it's obviously it's Decepticon metal. It's purple. It's like, metal is orange. Yeah, that's pretty much. It's all they did, which really underutilized and very like under the radar cool vehicle for G.I. Joe.
Right. Yeah, that was the first one I had when I was a kid, and it's real bad. It wasn't. Never mind. I'm thinking of a different thing. I'm thinking of the Flak, not the HAL. The HAL actually was kind of cool. The Flak was like a old defense gun thing. Okay. But anyways, the story unfolds a little more. Megatron, says that this thing is like it's so powerful that when it shoots something, it causes a chain reaction. And then his real master plan gets revealed when he's like, I'm going to shoot the Autobot headquarters and make a parking lot out of it.
Hey, go pay paradise.
It's essentially like an L.A. crime novel resolution. It's like it's a real estate scam. He's going to turn it into a parking lot and then, you know, have it be a pay parking lot.
This is Yakuza. This is Yakuza Zero's plot, actually.
Right.
It was the empty lot. They were going to, it was a parking lot. And they were going to build they wanted to build a building on it. That's, oh, my God.
Yeah. Wow. Before that, though, Optimus Prime as Motor Master is like, oh, Megatron, what are we going to do with this? You forget already? It's like, oh, yeah, I hit a lot of things. My memory's all messed up. And Starscream's like, huh. No one listens to Starscream.
We get some fun subtitles here. The someone says the Stunticons and then calls them the Stunted Cards. That was good. There's some better ones that are gonna come up. Right now, it's the part where Megatron and Starscream are arguing over whether or not they're the real Stunticons are. So he commands the in disguise ones to form Minasaur, to merge and become Minasaur, but the subtitles say to become Minnesotans.
Which is the ultimate transformation, if you think about it.
It really is.
Good on them. This whole thing is weird because you're like, okay, how are they going to do this? Well, obviously, Wind Charger's like, I'll just use my magnetic field and make a Minasaur. Really, is that easy?
Well, I mean, I did like this because this is another one I'm talking about where everybody remembered Bob Budiansky's tech specs.
Yeah.
And they actually remembered one that they had ignored earlier, because earlier they made it that Mirage could just turn invisible. But he can also project holograms, and he projected the head in this. So
that's pronounced holograms in the Transformers universe.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, actually, that was one of the things that they brought into the Rise of the Beast movie that people were all complaining about. Like, no, man, Mirage is like a displacer beast. He goes and just like he'll make multiple Mirages, things
right.
He'll throw people off. That's his whole bit. Yeah, this is right. Definitely a Budiansky moment here.
We get Minasaur versus Minnesotans, and this is cool. I'm real excited for this. This is very cool because like I say, anytime combiners fight each other, but this is we get the mirror match here. We get both people picked Ryu this time. This is real cool. But Megatron decides he's still not convinced who is who, and he's like, I'm just gonna shoot this laser at whoever loses.
If you have two Minasaurs, keep them both.
And my whole thing is, he really should have looked at his own record, because he's lost every time. So really, he should shoot the winner.
Right,
100%.
So I mean, he's gonna blow up the real one if he loses, and then he's like, well, now he's got to deal with five Autobots who can also combine into a combiner. And also, really, when you think about it, they really should have, they weren't like a true combiner, though, so it's not really, I was about to say, they should have done this again, because this is like the most powerful version of this, but
it was just at the end of the day, it was a silly episode, the reason for them to play around more with the Stunticons, which I'm cool with, because they're fun.
Minasaur had a blazing sword here.
Yes, he did.
A blazing sword, and he they didn't did. Even say anything about it.
Oh no, because it's a sword, man.
This is
a toy. This sounds like a Voltron thing. It's not like a finishing move. It's just like, hey, it's my sword. The Autobots did not have a sword, though.
Did the toy come with the sword?
Well, yeah. I mean, it wasn't that cool looking, but yeah. The original one, like it was like a chrome sword that looked like that, pretty much. He just goes and hits them, and they fall apart, and all of a sudden their paint wears off, and oh no, it's the Autobots. And Megatron's like, oh, perfect. I've got a gun right here. And I guess they've been listening to the generator on the gun power up and like overload for a while now.
Mm-hmm.
Just, oh, by the way, this is what's happening with that. Okay. Why not? At this point, like they're just kind of like, they're just like, okay, we got to get out of here before the thing blows up. And they left the Ruby there in the generator and everything else.
They booby trapped the
Ruby. Is that what it was? I missed that.
They booby trapped the Ruby. Yeah, and so it blew up on Megatron, and then the Decepticons run off, and then somebody says, some I think Optimus Prime says, I think they learned their lesson. They won't build another. But I think he said another Minasaur or something like that. But like the subtitles picked it up and said, I doubt he'll build another Minnesota. And Minnesota's just getting all kinds of wrecked on in this episode, and then the Autobots just show up. The rest of the Autobots just show up,
right?
Which is really uncalled for. I've been to Minnesota; it's a lovely place.
It is
kind of flat. Yeah, so whatever, man. Whatever the Megatron or the Stunticons thing about Minnesota, uncalled for. But Yeah, I mean, that's kind of the episode. It's like, oh, well, oh, yeah, and I'm sorry. Minasaur is like, nope, too many Autobots showed up. I got to leave.
Right.
That's right. I forgot about that. Like, Megatron's like, oh, Minasaur, there's only five of them. You could take them and, like, see all the cavalcade come through here. And, like, nope. He flies off, leaves Megatron and everyone there.
Well, I mean, yeah, I mean, like he knows the score. He knows his record. I mean, he's got like an 0-4 record at this point. Why is he going to hang around and lose?
Yeah, you're not wrong.
Yeah.
The Aerobots weren't even in this.
Well, I mean, like, it's like Ric Flair, you know, like he's just going to I'm just going to take the count out and keep the belt. So it's fine.
Yeah, you know, that's Masquerade, you know, for what it is.
So this was a cool episode, actually. I honestly liked it a lot. I felt like we were kind of teased with Devastator. I thought we were going to get some Devastator versus something or another here, or like a combiner team up. I was hoping for that, but
that was the main thing I didn't mention about this episode, is that what this episode proves is that the Constructicons have a union.
Yeah, well, they were on break.
They did their work and now they are done. You know, it's like we're not going to build this thing and fight. Minasaur can handle that.
Yeah. One or the other with the
sorry, you're gonna pay the union fees. It's like, nope, we gotta go.
Kid Brain would have really liked this, but I would have been really mad that I like, because there's no way that you can get. You would have wanted to recreate the battle at the end, but there's no way that in the 80s, you know, you could barely convince, you know, your mom and dad to get you the whole, like all five of the combiner of the right. robot for the combiner, you know, like unless you guys against that, right? But so, you know, you had like that deal where you go to the store and you get like one dude, you know, so like for like 3 or 4 months, you know, you were like combining like a body and then like one leg for a little while, you know. So like, but there's no way that you could have talked them into getting you two sets of Stunticons so you could recreate this battle. So like,
right.
You would have done that weird thing where you were like holding some dudes together, you know. You would have had like you were holding, like, a couple of guys on top of this prime, like you were making like a fake Minasaur. So you basically you couldn't have like faithfully recreated this battle, and that would have made me real mad. Or you would have, if you were lucky enough to have all of the Stunticons and all of like the aerial bots, you could have just like said that you know Superion was the other thing, but who wants the aerial bots anyway? So
no, right. Not me.
So yeah. So I'm gonna have to go. So Kid Brain, like I said, was real excited about it. I'm gonna go for Minneapolis, Minnesota Lakers out of five. Adult Brain, I liked it, but I hated that we didn't get more combiner. I was like, man, I really wanted to see Devastator do some stuff in this. But this episode, really, if you think about it, it had like all the elements of Transformers in it. You had like stuff about energy. You had heists. You had regular people doing stuff. You had all this stuff in it, but it gets dragged down for me a little bit by the safety bots, who I genetically hate, and they always
genetically.
Drag down, it's coded into my DNA there. So I'll have to go. So I have to dock it a little bit of a half a point. So I'm gonna go 3.5 mid-series beard editions out of five.
Well, last week, you know, I talked about my own trials and troubles of watching Transformers as a kid, whereas when Channel 15 stopped showing in the afternoon instead in the morning, I couldn't watch it when I got home from school, except for a Fort Walton station that sometimes came in. Mm-hmm. On one small black and white TV in my house. And this is 100% an episode I remember watching on that TV. And so really, I mean, this is a very complex episode if you can't really see what's going on. You know, there's disguises, but you're not really seeing the disguises very well. But I still loved it as a kid. I thought it was a cool concept. And so Kid Brain would definitely give this one 4 12-inch black and white TVs. You know, this, I think this might be the first time I've saw it again since then. And I still really liked it. It had some really dumb spots, but I'm going to give it an adult brain. 3 G.I. Joe stolen MacGuffins.
Yeah, man, honestly, this is a fun episode. I love any chance to have the Stunicons do knucklehead Stunicon stuff, especially like Dead End. But no, listening to Roger Carmel do the voice of Minasaur, Harry Mudd himself, was an added treat to this. Like I said, it was just dumb MacGuffin stuff, and it was fun. That wasn't a bad episode. We've had those. It was just, you know, it was a very self-contained. I don't know. We're gonna build a big super heavy weapon that's gonna blow up by the end of the episode. Cool. All right, roll credits. But yeah, honestly, I enjoyed it. I will give it 3. Yeah, I will give it 3 safety bots out of 5 on this one. Yeah. And I know you hate the safety bot so much. But went bad. But next week is finally we're gonna get to the Trans Europe Express.
Oh, right on.
Yes, finally.
This one's my jam.
Yep.
I'm really excited for that. This is the first episode we've had named after a Kraftwerk song, and I'm real excited for German minimalist this one. And I know I'm going to be disappointed, but something I never thought of is how not cool this show would look in black and white. Like, I think it would lose a lot because it's a very like bright and like colorful show. There's a lot of colors coming at you. I think it would lose a lot in black and white.
Definitely, but a lot of these characters are heavily identifiable by their bright color scheme, so yeah, it can be harder to follow.
Exactly. What about like Sideswipe and Sunstreaker? Like you just see two Lamborghinis right now.
One has Aaron takes the other one doesn't. Come on.
That's probably why I first noticed the difference between Ratchet's V and Ironhide's Mohawk is because they look identical in black and white.
Honestly, if you look at enough of the comics, you have to figure out the shapes of everyone, because Yamtov is a terrible colorist, and man, he is awful. And like he'll do someone. There's a cover where like I think it's Bruticus is swinging a train at someone else, and he's all blue and the other one's all red. There's no colors. It's just red and blue.
Yamtov's, I'm real mad about you talking trash about Neil Yamtov, by the way. That's messed up.
Neil Yamtov was one of the first comic book creator names I ever learned.
Same. There was a joke. There was a joke in a letters column one time where they were giving everybody nicknames that worked on that issue. And it was like Bob, the man Harris, John Byrne, but then it was like, Nell, why does my name sound like something from Star Blazers Yamtov? I was like, oh wow, it does sound like them.
Yeah, they did a lot of that actually. So yeah, in the Machine Man comics in the UK comics we've been going through with Boo, there's a lot of that. There's like Budiansky and that's not Budiansky, it's Simon Furman and Yamtov are messing with editors and stuff, and just back and forth. There's this banter going on, and it's just kind of silly. But dude, I'm sorry, I Yamtov's coloring on Machine Man, also the Transformers comic, dude.
Well, no, Yamtov was also probably doing colors on like 25 different books
every
month.
Yeah, yeah.
At that point, and also like coloring then and coloring now are not the same thing. Like now, everything is like computer colored these days, and it's real easy zoom in on the thing and then do a fill or whatever. But they were like hand cutting out colored Zipitone and like pasting it down onto
something. Yeah, yeah, I get that. And there are some comics. Some of the issues, they do really well with it. And then you see some like, they were going against a deadline.
You want to see some really bad coloring, though, that I hate is the Dark Horse Star Wars comics. Like if you're like Dark Empire, where like everything on one page is like three shades of blue. And then
It was like a weird watercolor thing that they just used one watercolor.
Yeah, I didn't. It's very bad. But
it's like painted comics where they ran out of paint.
it's pretty accurate. So
you'll see some really bad, well, actually. IDW had a G.I. Joe and Transformers issues, and it was I think it was Jay Lee was doing it, and there is so much like fog and so much dust or something, and every so often you see like a part of someone and you see like the Baroness, like her head sticking out. There's so much like fog of war just cover
spoiler
up.
It's because Jay Lee can't draw and does that to cover up the fact that he can't draw hands and feet.
I mean, it also could be that one, like one of those John Byrne deadline things, like that Alpha Flight issue where he had like 4 pages of just white space that he wrote off as Snowbird's power. Like it's awesome. There's literally just 4 pages of white panels and dialogue in them because he ran out of time because he was drawing like 4 books.
He was doing a bunch of books at that point. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Oof. All right, y'all. Well,
let's call it. And I guess I'm gonna go watch something on the black and white TV.
No, enjoy that. I'm gonna go have dinner. Y'all take it easy. See y'all next week. Thanks for being here, everyone. And join up in the Discord. Follow us. Email us. Yell at Ed about stuff. Besides, he hits spam on his email now. Not just not anyone talking about stuff. So definitely, y'all take it easy.
Roll out. There you go.
More Than Mises Guys is performed by Evan Johns and Ed Strickland with Boo of the Excellent Underground.com. Research is also done by Evan Johns, Ed Strickland, and Boo of the Excellent Underground.com. All used images are property of Hasbro, Sunbow, Paramount, and/or Marvel. And without you, none of this would be possible. So thank you so much for being here, and we look forward to you being here every week.